Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right. We ready to go, Reg? All right, let me just get, well, somebody's playing with their microphone again. Why is it so, it's like backwards. How did it get to be backwards? Okay, that good? How are the levels? Levels looking good. Levels looking good. Very nice, my friend. All right, you got the level set. Now all we have to do is just make sure you hit that button at the right time, and we're golden. All right, let's get started. Put in the book, episode 319, all right? Okay, I'll give you the three S's, and I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you episode 319. Sounds like a pact, all right? All right, here we go. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We're there. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. But also, you got some heavy lifting to do. So get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. Also, if you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNradio.com, press the prompt button for the podcast section, and hit the prompt for this podcast. And there you will find a scrolling, rolling selection. How's that? A scrolling and rolling collection of podcasts. Not just a plethora, not just a whole bunch, not just a boatload, but a scrolling, rolling selection of podcasts for you to delve into and enjoy, going all the way back to, hopefully, if they're back all there, May of 2016. We've done 318 of these. Oh, well, almost, because this is 319. So, anything happened in the last time we spoke? Wow. In the words of Carole King, I feel the earth move under my feet. I feel the sky tumbling down, a-tumbling down. Whew. Regardless of what your feelings or opinions or viewpoints are on the abortion issue and on the overturning of the Roe versus Wade decision last Friday, I think it's going to be one of those days you remember where you were, because that was one of those days when everything shook. At least I felt it. Completely out of the blue, even though we did get a precursor that the decision was going to come in June sometime, and we got a taste at, you know, when this leaked draft of Judge Alito's opinion came out about a month or so ago, that there was a good chance that the Supreme Court was going to overturn Roe versus Wade, and some people believed it, some didn't, some didn't care. Some thought, well, maybe the release of this draft might have, you know, swayed one or two judges when they saw the reaction to it. And so this shouldn't have been as shocking as it was, but it is one of those things, I believe, that when something in your life, you know, you may have a sense that something's going to happen. Until it happens, it doesn't really register. I remember, and if you haven't had this yet, then I will give you just the benefit of my insights, as unfortunate and sad as they are. But both of my parents were not in the best of health, physically or mentally, toward the end of their deaths. And they didn't die suddenly. It was a gradual thing. And so you think that you are prepared for it, perhaps, more than you might be if it was a sudden death out of nowhere, a stroke or a heart attack or an accident or something like that, where you go, whoa, I mean, one day I woke up and I had no idea, and the next minute. You think that maybe this gradual type of thing might prepare you for something bad. It doesn't have to just be death of a parent, but I would equate this to that, because what I have found in both of their cases, and they died about 14, 15 months apart too, so it wasn't a long time in between, really, relatively short. And I've had friends since then who have lost parents in a similar way, with a gradual kind of declining illness, and they too felt like, well, you know, I think I'll be ready, and you think you are until it happens, until the actual event happens, and what I have always told people is just feel what you're feeling, because you're never prepared. And you think you are, and that's deceptive. But but when the moment comes, and reality really hits, it jolts you nonetheless. And I think that's the way this was for many people on Friday, June 24th. And for many people, that will be a date many people remember. Just like November 22nd, where JFK was assassinated. I wasn't born then, so people ask me, where was I? And I said, well, I wasn't anywhere. But November 22nd, 1963, I wasn't anywhere. Well, I was actually somewhere, but I wasn't born. but wow, my entire lifetime, certainly, at least my cognizant lifetime of what I couldn't understand, when I came to be awareness, I was born before 1973 when the Roe versus Wade decision came down, but I was very young. So for most of my life, and certainly my life of being aware of being a person in our society, abortion has been a legal constitutional right. And suddenly, immediately, it wasn't. And I equate this once again to the shock value of it for many people, myself included. You could look at it that it happened within the last month, that perhaps there was a really good chance that this could happen. And you can argue in retrospect that for the last 50 years, almost 50 years since the Roe versus Wade decision came down, where the Supreme Court at that time in 1973 proclaimed that the right to have an abortion fell under the act of privacy, which is stated in the U.S. Constitution. Opponents of abortion made it their singular cause to have that overturned, whether it was deeply held religious feelings or deeply held humanistic feelings, whatever was the motivation, there was a very determined and over the years growing number of people who were dedicated to getting that case overturned, to effectively in many ways make abortion illegal. Now, we should also say that the decision that the Supreme Court made last week on June 24th does not ban abortion in the United States, does not make it illegal in the United States completely, right now at least. But within the next year, between these many states that had immediate or somewhat delayed so-called trigger laws, which if in fact the Supreme Court had ever overturned Roe the way these laws were written, if Roe was ever overturned, then these laws would go into effect either immediately right after the overturning, or there may have been a grace period of a month or 90 days or 6 months, whatever was written in each individual state's law. But when the dust clears in 6 months, perhaps, there's a good chance that more than half of the states in the United States will have some kind of ban or heavy restriction, outright ban, or certainly a very heavy restriction, much more than they ever had before, against abortion. More than half. There's an estimate that at least 26 out of the 50 states will have that. And so that's a huge change in life in America. And once again, regardless of whatever your views are on abortion, and once again, I understand this is a tinderbox issue. This is very sensitive. And in many ways, it cuts, and the reason why is because in many ways, it cuts right to an individual's core beliefs, one way or the other. And for some people, it's not even clear cut. Some people may be in favor of abortion or the right to have an abortion as a right, but may be against it themselves. They would never have one, but they see and understand and feel that the right to have one should exist, while others are very definite that there should be no abortions of any kind. And certainly there are others that believe that even if they're against abortion, there may be some possible exceptions, like if a woman or especially a child is raped or molested or some kind of incest, that they shouldn't be forced to carry a child that is born out of a crime necessarily. So this is a very complex issue, and I am not even going to begin to get into what I believe is right and wrong. I will just say, and because I don't know if it's not unfair, it's unfair for me to say what's right or wrong, I think. But I will say at the outset that I am certainly pro-choice. So whatever that means to you, that's where I am. But I'm not going to get into details or why or what or hows. So I preface that. I preface my comments and my opinions or whatever I'm going to be talking about here today, being honest with you there to say that I am certainly pro-choice. But at the same time, I always try to look at things, especially on this podcast, as I say, I try to come up with ideas or ways to talk about an issue that perhaps don't always get discussed. And as I've said many times, if you're a regular listener to this podcast, what I always try to do is look at things from a very realistic standpoint. I am a realist. I'm not a pessimist. I consider myself in many ways an optimistic realist, but I always fall more on the side of realism because that is what really happens. And in this case, I think while this is a hot issue, this is an emotional issue, this is a tinderbox issue that can go up in smoke because it is so emotionally tied. It's tied to who we are as people, right? I mean, aren't we? Our genetic code is about, survival of the fittest, or survival, right? Procreation. But at the same time, we live in a country that is founded on, at least ideologically, theoretically, on freedom and liberty and freedom of choice. And so in the case of abortion, the reason why this topic is so emotionally charged and so divisive, and especially in today's world, the irony here is that in the middle of the perhaps one of the most divisive times in our country's history, and I wouldn't say the most divisive time because I think that's overstating things. Whenever we're involved, we always think it's the most, right? We always, our narcissism always comes into play. And whatever happens in our lifetime is the most or the greatest thing. And that's not necessarily true. It is from our viewpoint because we weren't around before and we don't know what's going to happen when we're gone. So it has to be in our minds. And as I said, in our human narcissistic way, this has to be the most important thing on earth. Don't forget, there were people 2,000 years ago. I mean, the Bible is written on it felt that the earth was ending soon, right? That's what the book of Revelation and the Bible is all about. So 2,000 years ago, people were feeling that the earth was about, that humanity was in such a bad state. That the world would soon be ending, that God was going to end it all, the world was going to be over in their lifetime because it was important to them. They were living. And 2,000 years later, we realize how silly that is until we think about ourselves in our own lifetime and we think that, the greatest band in history is the Beatles. Everything that happens in our time is the most important and the greatest thing in history. Well, in our history. And what we will find soon is that our history will, like all the histories before us, will go down into dust and be long forgotten. And sorry to sound so pessimistic, but as I said, I'm a realist. And that's the truth. Aside from some key events and maybe some key people, of all the people that have lived in this world, going back to the times of ancient Rome and the Egyptians, of all the people that have lived over the last 5,000 years or whatever it might be, how many do you really know of? People lived lives every day. There were things that happened. There were impactful and influential things that happened, but they all faded from history, as we will. Some things will stick around. We know about Mozart, right? We know about some of the Egyptian pharaohs. We have the stories of the Bible. We know about the Roman Empire because of the artifacts that we have found, but we don't really remember everything that happened day after day after day. So, yes, there's no question. As I said before, in my lifetime, this is certainly one of the biggest societal shifts. And but it's... At the end of the day, 50 years from now, it may be a blip. Who knows? But right now, wow, there was a seismic shift in the way that we live our lives and what will happen. So as I said before, I know this is a very emotional and divisive issue. As I said before, in a time when we've already been divided over the last decade or so, if not more, really. It's been going on for much longer. It's not just the last 5 or 6 years or even 10 years. We've been slowly dividing being less communal. And I've always talked about this. I mean, there's no question. You can make an argument that the internet started the whole thing in a impactful way. Have we ever really been the United States of America? We weren't even found when we were founded. We weren't even united. Think about that, right? I mean, when we were founded, we were not the United States of America. We had when you read the Constitution, it has flowing, flowery, aspirational, and inspirational language, but it was mostly that. It was not based in the reality of the time. It was high-minded ideology, which in many ways is what's ruling right now. But the United States was we the people, and yet, you know, the pursuit of happiness, and all men are created equal. But women did not have rights. Couldn't vote. This was the great democracy, and half the population wasn't allowed to participate in it. And then, of course, at the same time, not only were women excluded from the great experiment, from this great democracy of all men being created equal, but then we had this little thing called slavery going on, well, on which the country was based on. Half the country, at least. Certainly a third of it. Legalized slavery. People being owned by others. No rights. Literally in the Constitution, people were valued. Slaves were valued at 3/5 of a person in terms of counting for, you know, population. But the founders of our country literally put a numeric amount on a slave's life. And it wasn't 100%. It was 3/5 of a person. Now look, I love America. I'm a very proud citizen of America, but we have to be realists. We have to realize that our country is filled with hypocrisy from its founding. And you could say that it was, as I said before, aspirational, but it was a country, and it was a constitution. It was a revolution that was founded ultimately on compromise. That's what the Constitution was. It was compromise. It had to be, because you had a major conflict within it. One side of the Constitution is talking about freedom and liberty, and the next one is allowing slavery to exist within that same system. And the truth of the matter was, the southern states would not have gone along with this idea of a country called the United States if slavery was outlawed. So we had compromise right from the get-go. We were founded on compromise. That's what's so frustrating in today's world, is that there is no room for compromise, even in this decision. It is not gradual. It is black and white. In many states, it is illegal to have an abortion, no questions asked. Whether it is incest, rape, health of the mother, doesn't matter. Baby must be brought to term. That kind of strict adherence, I don't even know what the word is. That strict doctrine did not exist, even in our Constitution. We were based on compromise.
we were able to, whether it does seem contradictory, we were based and founded on compromise. We were looking to have a country based on freedom and liberty, but we also allowed slavery at the same time. Now, you know, 100 years later or so, almost 100 years later, we abolished slavery, but in theory, and you know, when we look at Juneteenth holiday that recently was celebrated, even that didn't happen overnight. The whole idea of Juneteenth is that on June 19th, 2 years later after the Emancipation Proclamation, slavery was officially ended in this country, where slaves in Texas were finally informed that they were free. 2 years after slaves in other states were freed. So even then, when that was signed, it was not immediate. It was gradual, whether it was deliberate or not. But this was very abrupt. As I said, in six or seven states, within hours, abortion was deemed illegal in many states. And women who had appointments for an abortion that day, that Friday, were turned away. So, you know, as I said before, a major shift in one day, in a matter of hours, in a matter of minutes, people that at one moment, what was once legal was suddenly illegal, and it happened that fast. Yes, there were hints of this. As I said before, we had an idea that this might happen, but until it happens, it's not official. And until it happens, it doesn't really hit us until you realize that you can't do something you used to do just minutes before. Or something that existed is suddenly gone. Something that existed just minutes before is suddenly gone. And that takes time. And that, I think, is what is also kind of shocking about this. And you saw the reactions of this on Friday after, because of these trigger laws especially. But also people looking at the bigger picture of what it would mean. And so, what from my viewpoint, I try to look at things once again from a very realistic standpoint, and so while I certainly have my personal views on it, I also, as I always try to do, is I try to see both sides of an argument. I always try to play devil's advocate for another side that may be in complete opposition to what I feel. And for some, in today's world, being the devil's advocate is not an attribute that many people are looking for or consider good, because we are so black and white in this country today. I've always seen gray. I always have very strong opinions. I feel strongly about what I believe, and I will defend it. But I also try to see the other side, and at times try to learn, or at least at the very least understand where someone is coming from. So even if I vehemently disagree with their viewpoint, at least I try to have some sense of understanding to say, I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree with you. I wish as a country we at least had that. But today, as I said before, the internet led to social media. So you could argue that in the mid-90s, when the internet started, that, you know, we were looking at maybe, you know, the beginning of cell phones. Or people are even looking even shorter. Oh, we haven't been divided since the time, you know, since Donald Trump took over. Well, that to me is very short-sighted and just very biased. We were divided in this country long before Donald Trump took over. We were dividing this country when Barack Obama was president. We were dividing this country when George Bush was president, the second one. We were dividing this country when Ronald Reagan took place. That was in 1981 when he became president. We've been divided in this country long even before that. Not perhaps as much. You could probably really look to Vietnam in the late to mid 60s, that which went on into the mid 70s when the first real divide went on. But then you could look before that and you could say, well, where were we at on civil rights? The United States of America was a very good PR slogan, as I said before. For the founding fathers, it was an impressive sounding slogan for what they were doing. They were trying something different in a world at that time, and in the 1700s, where most of the world was still run by monarchies or theocracies or dictators, whatever you want to call them, but most countries were run by single figureheads, single people, who at the end of the day called the shots. Certainly they had governmental institutions, but many of the final decisions were in the hands of one person who made that decision. And there's no question that the founding fathers were trying to do something new and different, as I said before, inspirational and aspirational. And so the term United States of America, even though it really didn't correctly reflect what was happening in this country, it may have been hypocritical from the first start. I believe that the term United States was put in there as an aspirational goal. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are filled with aspiration. It's written in a very declaratory, is that the right word? In a very definite way of saying this is it. There shall be no, almost like the Ten Commandments, but behind that all was more of a hope than a certainty. This idea of the country was completely new. It was based on governments and democracies and republics of the past, Greeks and Romans. But then it had its own spin as well. And the checks and balances that are built into the system were there in reaction to what was happening at the time. It was a reaction to the monarchies and the tyrannies and the dictators and the absolute power held by few. The goal was to be held by many, and checks and balances and the will of the people would rule the day through representative government. Not necessarily majority rule. There's always a little, misunderstanding on that too. It's not always about majority rule. We always think it is. But as I said, the Constitution is a very complex and aspirational document, and it's not perfect. That's why we have amendments to it. Right off the bat, we had 10 Bill of Rights that were not in the original. And we've had many amendments since then. But as we sit here today in 2022, we have to take a look at where we're going and who we are and how do we remain aspirational. We have been ununited in this country for a long time. And as I said before, the great irony is that as we have been so divided, so obviously divided, we've been divided for a long time. We've tried to play it down, and we've tried to cover it up. But we've been divided for a long time. I would say the last time that we haven't been, that we've been truly United States was probably during World War II. And I wasn't around then, so I don't know what it was like to live day by day. I'm sure there were some people, well, obviously there were some people against the war then, but certainly as a country, as a people, we did band together in World War II. We made sacrifices for the larger good. And I don't know if we would ever be able to do that again. And if we did, it would seem like it's mostly short-lived. Don't forget, World War II was about, you know, 4 years of our involvement. We were united for a while during the days after 9/11, but that soon faded. That didn't unite. That happened at the beginning of this century, and here we are, the most divided we've ever been in recent history. And yet we had this galvanizing, united event just 20 years ago when the whole country and the world was on our side. And we personally, as a country, banded together and felt united. And that faded away fairly quickly. And here we are 20 years later and 9/11 and the unity that we had around 9/11 in those days and months and even a couple of years before that. Because quickly after 9/11, when we got involved in Iran, we were divided whether we should be in Iran or not. And that was very short-lived. So we've been a divided country for a while, not just because of Donald Trump. Once again, I'm not a Donald Trump fan. But there's so much just blanket hatred for Donald Trump, which to me, in a lot of ways, is a lot of deflection for people that don't want to admit that we've been divided for a longer time. He's a convenient scapegoat. He didn't do himself any favors, but I don't believe that he was the great divider of this country. We've been divided for a while. We were just putting a lot of spackle on it for a while, for decades. For many decades. And now the spackle has not only chipped away, but those original cracks that we used the spackle on are not only showing, but they're getting wider. And this decision last Friday, certainly, if there was any spackle left, it fell off completely. And now the cracks are showing, and the cracks under the spackle were getting bigger, and now they are being completely exposed. It's going to be a very interesting time in the next 20 years in this country, and we have to look at it that way. Not being pessimistic, being realistic. For the first time in many of people's lives, we have to begin to play the long game. When I heard about the overturning of Roe, my first reaction was not disgust or anger. It was, why are you so surprised? I don't, even though I am pro-choice, I don't blame the pro-life movement for what happened on June 24th. I don't blame Donald Trump for his naming of three conservative justices that led to this overturning. I don't blame Mitch McConnell, who also played a role, really, probably starting the beginning of this by holding off a judicial appointment during Barack Obama's last year in office. I don't blame the Supreme Court justices that came down with this decision. They're certainly all contributing factors. But as I said before, we live in a democracy where people and our government is working with a set of rules in a democratic and representative government. And the fact of the matter is that those people, whether they are religious zealots or strict constitutional adhere to a strict interpretation of the Constitution, or whether they were people that were just trying to get elected and change their viewpoints to make favor with a large, enthusiastic group that voted. And you can argue that's what Donald Trump did. Whatever that is, those are contributing factors, no question. But what was really behind the overturning of Roe was the group of people. It was democracy in action. I know for some people that almost sounds hard to digest, or they'll completely dismiss what I'm saying, but no. There were people in this country that did not agree with the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, and they banded together to make their voice and their opinions known. That is democracy. Even if it doesn't fall into what you believe, the fact of the matter is the anti-abortion movement played within the rules. They played within the system. Now, granted, yes, they may have manipulated the system in some ways when they were in power. I'm not absolving everybody, but my point is that they went about it within our system. There was no war. There has been violence, don't get me wrong. There's been violence, sadly, on the abortion front. People have been killed. Abortion clinics have been blown up. Both sides are not without guilt in this abortion issue over the last 50 years. Both sides have done violence. But ultimately, this was changed within our system. The difference is that the anti-abortion movement played the long game. We in America are not good at playing the long game. But for many people who are pro-abortion and who have not been thinking in the political world, thinking about the long game, they've got a rude awakening that the long game ultimately does prevail. But we have always been, certainly in the last 100 or so years, we now have a ridiculously short attention span, but we look for temporary and fast satisfaction. We're always looking for fast solutions, fast ends. That's why COVID is still around, folks. People are still, right now we're in the midst of levels going up again. In many people's minds, well, I'm tired of COVID. It's only been 2 years. That's not a long time, but people were tired of COVID after 2 months, if you remember, back in 2020. People didn't want to wear masks or Donald Trump was saying that COVID would be done by Easter. And the first COVID cases were popping up in some real numbers, in late February, early March. And he was saying by April it's going to be gone. Don't even worry about it. We are a fast-consuming, short-term society, and it's to our detriment. Look at our in business. A company's health, if you will, their balance sheet, is examined by quarters every 4 months. Or I'm sorry, every 3 months. Every 3 months, they have a report card. Oh, I don't care how you did last year. I don't care what you did over the last 10 years. What did you do in the last 3 months? What did you do in the fourth quarter? What did you do in the third quarter? That's how they are determined. A company could have been doing great over the last 5 years, but if they've had two or three quarters that have been down, the CEO gets fired. Regardless of what he may have done or he or she may have done in the last 5 or 6 or 10 years, it's always about now, and it's always short. And what we're learning the hard way is that the long game may not bring instant gratification, but the long game in many ways does wind up coming out in front. 49 years. Many people who started this fight to have abortion outlawed are no longer here. But that's not what they worried about. They didn't worry about them being here. They worried about the end game. Most people want an ending or a solution to happen on their timetable so that they can experience it. And that's why we have so many problems that still exist, because we're always trying to shortcut the solutions, and we never get down to the nitty-gritty. And so we are still fighting and trying to solve many of the same problems that we've had in this country for hundreds of years, because we're not honest with ourselves on what the root causes are. And so they're always temporary solutions. Perfect example, 9/11. I mentioned it before. The Taliban was around in Afghanistan during 9/11, right? Who's running Afghanistan today, 20 years later? It's not us. We invested billions of dollars over the last 20 years. Hundreds of thousands of lives lost in fighting a war in Afghanistan. Billions of dollars spent, lives lost. Taliban, 20 years later, still in power. They weren't for a while, but ultimately they are now. The long game. They knew. They don't have a timetable. The Taliban didn't have a timetable. They just knew that they wanted to and were going to rule Afghanistan again. If in the terrorist minds, in the terrorist world, and thankfully we're not seeing much, you know, ultimate terrorism like we were, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, but they're not worried. They're not worried about taking over the world in the next 10 years. It could happen in the next 200 years, as long as it happens. We're looking at Ukraine right now with Putin. We'll see. Right now it's being defined as Putin's war, but really, is it? Or is it Russia's war? Will they wait it out? They learned a lesson in Afghanistan, too, that was the Afghans waited out Russia to the point where it probably bankrupted them enough that that's why communism fell. The long game, it doesn't provide instant gratification, nowhere close, but it does provide results. And so here we are in 2022, 50 years later. Whether you agree with them or not, you must acknowledge what the pro-life movement did. They played the long game. They played the system. They remained vigilant. They remained focused. The anti or the pro life or the pro, I'm sorry, I always get these mixed up. The pro-choice world became complacent. Well, we have the right. It's in the Constitution. No one's going to ever overturn Roe. Let those people go with all their craziness and all their speeches, and let them, you know, elect all these right wings, you know, these right wing candidates, and let them do all their signs and all that stuff. But we've got the right. It's in the Constitution. So let's move on. From day one, there was, in the 1973, there was great controversy about Roe versus Wade. And those who really knew about it knew that the right to an abortion in our Constitution was a fragile right. It was bestowed by a Supreme Court ruling, but that ruling was even questioned by legal scholars who were pro-abortion. They appreciated the right. They felt that women had a choice and had the right to what happens to their bodies. But from a legal standpoint, even someone like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is the patron saint of the far left, acknowledged that from a legal standpoint, the decision of the Supreme Court in 1973 was questionable law that may have been judicial activism. Even though she agreed with the right and was glad that they did it, she also had to acknowledge, from a realistic standpoint, and this is what I'm always saying, not ideologically, but realistically, she even, as much of a supporter of women's rights her whole life, she did have to acknowledge on several occasions over the last 30 years that the legal founding of the original Roe versus Wade judgment was questionable. And we've always been afraid, it's always been a question of how fragile that right is. But the far left, or forget about party affiliations, those who were pro-choice took it for granted. They took their eyes off the ball. We've got the right, so we can worry about other things. Meanwhile, the pro-lifers never gave up the fight. You whether you agree with them, whether you intellectually or personally despise them, I don't care about that. You must acknowledge what they did as a group. They were committed to their views. They were focused. They were organized. They were passionate. They were energetic. And they played the long game. And they played the long game within the system. So now, what the other side is going to have to do is reawaken. The next 15 years, like I said, you have to look at this now in a 20-year, this isn't going to happen overnight. I know President Biden says, go vote and we'll be able to codify Roe in law. That's not going to happen for 20 years. We are a divided country. Right now, the Senate is 50-50. The only reason the Democrats have the voting power is because the vice president can cast the deciding vote. You saw what happened with President Biden's, big plan. Two Democrats said no, and that's killed it. We are divided as ever. The midterms come, and people are saying, "Oh, there's going to be a great wave one way or the other." And now that this may energize Democrats, but we are so split that I would not be surprised at the end of the day that, yes, there may be a little more because of the economy and everything, inflation and other things that people are finding it hard to make ends meet. There may be some Republican gains in the House, but I guarantee you that the Senate is not going to shift all that much. Right now, the Senate is very representative of who this country is. There's 100 senators, two from each state, and we're at 50-50. And I wouldn't be surprised if we fall right at that same number or maybe one or two seats one way or the other. But there's not going to be any vast majorities happening here for a long time. But what we're also going to have to deal with, and I've talked about this many times, the implications of this decision are going to be devastating in many ways. And this is what I said before. Ideologically or legally, if you read through, and I haven't read it page for page, but I've certainly read enough of what's been the key passages of Judge Alito's opinion, decision on overturning Roe. From a legal standpoint, purely legal, it sounds very reasonable and intellectually logical of what he is saying. Basically, what Alito is saying and the basis for the overturning of Roe is that the previous court overstepped its bounds by allowing abortion to fall under a vague umbrella of privacy, which is not enumerated, which is not said definitely in the Constitution. And they expanded the term of privacy to include a woman's choice over her body. And you can argue that one way or the other, I think. But what Alito basically is saying is that in the midst of this in 1973, many states, at that time, 46 states, people don't really, you know, this has been 50 years, but I've done a little research on this. 46 states, when Roe went into effect, 46 states banned abortion. 46 out of 50 states banned abortion. We weren't a pro-choice country by any means. We were still a very religious-based country in many ways 50 years ago. Things were changing, but many of the laws were still based on religious affiliations or viewpoints. Abortion was outlawed or at least restricted in some way in 46 of the 50 states. So imagine that. You think there was a jolt now? In 46 of the 50 states, suddenly what was illegal was legal. So I'm sure there was quite a jolt on that side. And maybe that's what energized the pro-life movement. No one's really talking about that jolt. No one's really talking about how that felt at that time. Clearly, it jolted many people with either deep religious views or humanistic views. 46 out of 50. We're complaining right now that 26 out of 50 may have ban or at least have very tight regulations on abortions when all is said and done here in the next 5 or 6 months. But at the time of Roe versus Wade, when Roe versus Wade said abortions are legal, 46 states either had tight restrictions or banned abortions completely. So there had to be a jolt there. And what did those people and the people that got jolted decided to band together and put democracy in action? Once again, I might not agree with their viewpoints, but I must give them credit for what they did. Now the onus is on those who were jolted this week. Are you going to sit down and just complain and write on social media, or are you going to do what the pro-life contingent did was get organized, band together, and play the long game and play within the system. As I said, there were some fast and flighty little things here for this to have happened. You can argue, oh my gosh, in the last 5 years, this whole thing changed. You know, Mitch McConnell played games with the Obama appointment, and then they rushed in the final one during Trump's last months of Trump's terms, and he got one in the middle when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Oh, this all happened so fast. I can make an argument on the other side. Once again, devil's advocate, trying to see both sides. If I was religious, deeply religious, and had these really deep religious, you know, Bible-held views, then I would say, well, wait a minute. Well, you know, all of a sudden, you know, there's gay marriage, and there's all these other things that came out of nowhere very quickly. Now, once again, I'm in favor of those. But if I wasn't, I would say, whoa, what's going on? So now, the other side is getting a jolt. The question is, what do you do? The onus now is on the pro-choice people. Are they going to step up to the challenge? Because they dropped the ball. They took their eyes off the prize. They just got complacent and assumed that things would always go their way. And now they're not. So are you going to sulk? Or are you going to try to change that law, which the pro-lifers did? They played within the system. First, they decided, well, we need to elect, you know, presidents and senators and representatives who are pro-life. But this was such a divided issue that there would never be enough votes. And so they realized that the only way, true way, to change this law was not through politicians, because politicians are so, they don't have any allegiance. They have a allegiance to one thing, getting reelected. They don't have any allegiance to any real beliefs. They will be on your side until you don't do them any good, and then they will go to the other side. All they're worried about is getting reelected, and you better understand that. There's a few, don't get me wrong, who may be truly committed, but most politicians are looking to get reelected and keep power. And they get really good at one thing, not passing bills, not passing laws, not helping people all that much, but they do a really good job of getting reelected because that's what they're focused on. So the pro-lifers said, you know, we've gotten burned by too many presidents and too many senators and too many representatives that said, oh, well, we're gonna change that law. We voted for you guys in block numbers throughout the last 40 or 50 years and didn't do anything. So we are going to go over your heads and go where the real power is, the ones who changed it in the first place. We need to get conservative judges who believe what we do. And so how are we going to do that? And as I said, Democrats or pro-choicers, this should not have come as a shock to you. Whether you liked Hillary Clinton or not in 2016, whether you liked her pantsuits, whether you didn't like the way her voice sounded when she screamed or talked loud and all these other picky things, it was very clear in the campaign in 2016, Donald Trump. Do not be mad at Donald Trump. Donald Trump did exactly what he said he was going to do. And if you weren't paying attention, then shame on you. Because, even if he didn't believe it, he courted the people that did. And even if he used them to get elected, then that's the way the game works. So play the game. Donald Trump in the election, during the debates, was very clear that he was pro-life, and that if he was president, he was going to nominate pro-life judges with the end goal to overturn Roe. He said that. He even put out a list of the potential people that he would nominate for the Supreme Court, and they were all pro-life, conservative, constitutionally adherent justices. This was nothing that was done under the cloak of darkness or behind closed doors. He made it very clear. And Hillary Clinton, who ran a horrible campaign and should have seized on that and should have just made it her sole issue, really. But she didn't, because she was very complacent and elitist and figured this guy can't beat me in a million years, and ran a horrible campaign. And once again, I don't want to hear about, oh, well, she got more popular votes than Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton knew about the Electoral College. It's been around since the country did. That's the way the president is elected. Hillary Clinton is a smart woman, and she's a lawyer, and she's a politician, and she knows. And her husband got elected twice because of the Electoral College. So she knew about the Electoral College, and she knew about how it adds up and where it adds up and how the numbers add up. But she didn't care. She didn't pay attention to that because she thought she was going to win in a landslide. And Donald Trump ran a campaign where he keyed in on some states that could swing the Electoral College. If you know the rules, play by the rules. That's where the Democrats get in trouble. They get outsmarted by the system. Republicans know the game and play the game. And that's why they win most of the time. Yeah, Donald Trump lost the popular vote. Didn't matter. Won the election. Then afterwards, all these Democrats were screaming, go get rid of the Electoral College. Okay, fine, get rid of it, but you can't do it in the middle. You knew the rules. Same thing here. If you did not vote in the 2016 election because you didn't like Hillary Clinton, so you didn't vote at all because you didn't want to vote for Donald Trump, so you just stayed home, or if you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton and you voted for the Green candidate, you went and voted, but then you voted for a third-party candidate, didn't have a chance in heck of winning, then don't blame Donald Trump. Don't blame the pro-life movement. Don't blame the Supreme Court. Don't blame Mitch McConnell. Blame yourself. If you had, if abortion rights were so important for all the people that were out in the streets on Friday screaming and crying and protesting this, if none of you voted, or if you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, then that's all just for naught. Hillary Clinton should have beat Donald Trump in the Electoral College by a landslide, by the popular vote by a landslide. Women alone should have all banded together, especially on the Democratic side or any side. If you cared about abortion rights, whatever, what side you are politically. If you cared about abortion rights, it was clear that Donald Trump was going to name conservative judges. And we all were, and we knew at this time that there were several judges that were old in age. We knew Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health was bad. The writing was on the wall. But Democrats were not focused. They were complacent. They were not organized. They were not focused. Oh, well, we have that right. They'll never overturn Roe. It was done in the light of daylight, not behind the scenes. So on the day that that was overturned, I looked around and said, this should be no surprise, folks. And if you sat out in 2016 or you voted for the Green Party or some other third, fourth, or fifth party or just didn't vote, and if abortion, even if everything about Hillary you detested, the one thing, if abortion rights were this important to you, like we're seeing now, all the protests, if they were that important to you, you should have put all the rest aside and voted for Hillary Clinton. Because that's what the pro-lifers did. They didn't like Donald Trump. They didn't like half the Republican presidents and people they voted for the last 50 years. But those people said, I'm on your side. And so they put aside all the other misgivings they had because they had one singular goal. And that's what Democrats are going to have to do now. They have to vote on issues. And if it's one singular goal or one issue, then that's it. If in your life, if abortion rights are important to you, then you, from now on, better put all your other misgivings and all your personal picadillos and, oh, I don't like the way Hillary's hair looks, or I don't like the way pantsuit she wears, and all this other BS. Because Hillary, if Hillary Clinton wins, Friday doesn't happen. It's that simple. And that's the God's honest truth. That's reality. There would not have been three conservative, new conservative justices that would have been able to overturn this. It was a 5-4 vote. Hillary Clinton would have named three pro-lifers, pro-choicers. Once again, I always get these. She would have named three pro-choice justices, and Roe would still be intact today. So look in the mirror. Don't blame Donald Trump. Don't blame the Supreme Court. Don't blame Mitch McConnell. Don't blame the pro-life movement. It's time to look in the deep, dark, truthful mirror and face reality. And if you didn't vote, or you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, and you are pro-choice, then look at yourself. And as I said, you know, the thing about abortion, too, is that it's such a tinderbox issue that, you know, maybe, I mean, we live in a country of laws, and so we want to have good laws on the books, right? And for many people's views, and I said, even pro-choice people, pro-choice legal scholars were all very tentative, many of them. Many high-profile ones about the real legality of Roe versus Wade, that there really was some judicial activism going on here, reading too much into it in order to pass a law. And you know what? Here's the thing. As I said, you have to look at 20 years now for something to really change on this. I mean, Roe is gone. It is finished. There's no do overs here, folks. The laws are going into effect here, and this is going to affect real people in a real way. And sadly, we're going to start to hear in the months and years that go by, we are going to hear some horrible stories, which might help to coalesce people if they want to change this back and make abortion legal. But we're going to hear, there are ramifications. This is the other side about reality. While I give the pro-life movement credit for what they did, I also believe that while I respect their religious beliefs, once again, in reality, the real consequences and ramifications of this outlawing of abortion is going to lead to some really horrible stories and real human tragedies that don't exist today. And that is going to happen. While in theory it would be great that every baby that's conceived is born into a loving family, but the reality, once again, I'm bringing up reality, the reality is that's not the way a lot of children are brought into this world. Even today, until before last Friday, even though for the last 50 years, we have seen the abuses that some kids have gone through within their own families or within foster families. We have seen the neglect. Yes, it would be great, in theory, that every child that was born was loved and was born into a loving family, and children were running in the park. Oh, that sounds great. But it's not realistic. And we're going to start to hear some real, real sad stories. Stories that we haven't heard of in a long time. And those same people who wanted to legalize abortion or to outlaw abortion, they better not vote against candidates that then want to raise taxes to support Medicaid or for families or or adoption services or foster or anything that people need, because there are going to be, if you are forcing people to have a baby, then you have to make plans for when that baby's born. It's not, you can't walk away from it just when it's born. You can't say, well, at least we got another baby born. No. We've seen what neglect does. Yes, there are many kids in this country that are born into loving families, no question. But there are also a lot of kids that are unwanted or neglected, or they cannot be financially taken care of, and the baby is born anyway. And those are the ones who become troubled for themselves and a trouble on society in terms of crime and other things. There are and will be consequences to this. And what we're not thinking about, everybody's thinking about the life of the child. And I understand that. But I think very few people are thinking about the emotional state of a mother, of a woman, who will be forced to carry a baby that she doesn't want. What will that do to her emotionally? Whether it is conceived not out of some illegal thing like rape or incest, but let's be honest, it's kind of easy to have a baby. And a lot of people are not responsible in the heat of the moment, if you know what I mean. Yes, it would be great if there was no need for abortion. Wouldn't that be great? But that's not reality. People are getting pregnant every day when they don't want to. They get caught in the heat of the moment or whatever it might be. And here's the other side. What's ironic is, I don't have any specific data on this, but I would just say, if you're a conservative or if you're of the religious bent, if you are against abortion, many of these same states that are anti-abortion also don't want sex education to be taught in schools. So we don't want kids to know about sex. But if they have sex and a woman gets pregnant, we want them to have the baby. So we're not really teaching them not how to have it. So we're against sex education, but we're also against terminating a pregnancy that's not wanted. Once again, contradictory. You can't have it both ways. Many times children are born, people are pregnant because they don't really know what it go, especially at a young age, in 15 or 16 or 17, they don't know all the rules because they're not being taught in schools, and their parents, as much as they say, it's my responsibility, they don't want to touch sex because of it's a taboo subject to them. We are still stuck in our puritanical roots that go back to the Pilgrims. We are still a country that is very uncomfortable with sex. And yet, we're now, with the, we don't want kids to have sex, but then when they get pregnant, we don't want them to correct the mistake. Well, maybe if they were taught sex education, they wouldn't have made the mistake in the first place. They wouldn't be a need for abortion. If we were more realistic about sex education. That's why this is such a hot topic, and it's an irrational topic. And we will never agree on this. That's why in this case, as maybe as flawed law as Roe versus Wade may have been, maybe it was okay to bend the rules on this one, because it's such a inflammatory topic that we will never agree on legislatively. Maybe it took a group that didn't have any accountability to just put this into place. because sadly, there are not going to be a lot of kids running around in happy, loving families because of this. There's going to be a lot of horror stories about kids that are raised in families that they're not wanted in, or families that they can't, that mothers aren't prepared emotionally or financially to handle, especially young kids who get pregnant. And that responsibility falls on government then to support them. So you better be ready to pay more taxes, because we're going to need more services. And not every adoptive family and not every foster family is great and loving. We've seen kids in foster care get abused and killed. We've seen adopted kids get abused and killed. It would be great if everything worked out and with puppies and rainbows, but let's deal with reality and the human element, and it doesn't work that way. Theoretically, yes, legally, this may have been the right thing to do, to give it back to the states and let people vote on it. Theoretically, it would be great that every baby that is conceived should have a chance to live. I get it, but that is not the real world that we live in. And I'm afraid of the horror stories we're going to see, and that's and I've talked about this before too. Sadly, this was the one time in our world that we actually did something to prevent something bad. We are not into prevention. We only react after bad things happen. And what's sad in this case is that sadly, for several years, maybe even decades, we are going to have to hear of horror stories until finally we are fed up. Look at the gun thing. Kids are getting killed in schools, and that's still not enough for us to change gun laws. So do you think if we hear a steady stories of children being abused and growing up and our crime rate raising because the kids are born into families that the families don't even want to raise them? That's our main reason of our crime today. Kids that are not getting attention at home for whatever reason. They're going out in the streets and gangs are recruiting them. Are we going to have to go through 10 or 20 years of higher crime and hearing horror stories of kids being abused or killed? And then we're going to say, well, maybe we need to have abortion with some restrictions again. Do we have to go through this for the next 20 years? I don't have any answers to this, but all I can tell you is if you're pro-life, you're going to see the ramifications of this in the next several years, and all of it's not going to be pretty. And if you're pro-choice, there are going to be ramifications of this. It's not going to be pretty. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to use this as a wake-up call? Are you going to get off your complacent world and play the long game and get energized and get focused and try to change it? Or if you're pro-life, are you going to then embrace sex education in schools? Are you going to embrace social services with more money for young women, single women perhaps, who don't have the financial means to raise a kid? Are you going to be in favor of more social services, of bigger government to help these people that you help create because you force them to have a baby? Are we ready for the ramifications on both sides, because this is going to have consequences. And we as a country and we as a society better get ready and deal with it in a realistic way. Something changed on June 24th, 2022. And now we're just going to have to see how we deal with that change. Whichever side of this issue you are on, you're going to have to start to think differently, because there are going to be consequences on both sides. I hope, perhaps in an odd way, this decisive and divisive decision actually makes us united again. It's possible. But is it likely? And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 319. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Thanks for listening. It's your choice.